The secret page. 2 weeks later, we finally arrived in Vienna on a stormy Wednesday evening with the rain pouring in sheets down the sides of our carriage. I held Wolfril's hand and waited in our seats with Mama as Papa helped the coachman bring our trunks inside the inn. My breath clouded in the air and drifted out into the wet world.
"Are you warm, Wolfril?"
I asked, pressing a hand to his forehead. His cheeks were pale, but at least his skin did not seem feverish. My brother only stared at the inn.
"The Emperor lives in an awfully small house," he declared.
The four of us stayed together in one room, Papa and Mama in the larger bed, and Wolfril and me in the smaller one. Papa had requested a clavier to be brought up to our room so that we could practice for several days before seeing the Emperor. We listened to our parents talk about how we were to deliver notice to the palace that we had arrived in the city, how Wolfril and I should be presented. This was our first performance outside of Salzburg, and our reputations, as well as that of Herr Schachtner, who had arranged it all, depended on how this concert would go. As our reputations went, so would our fortunes. Everything needed to be just so.
"Wolfril needs new shoes," Papa said.
"Nannerl needs a new petticoat," Mama added. The more I heard them talk, the more my thoughts churned. I slept poorly that night. My nightmares fed on one another. Visions of a clavier with no keys in a room with no audience. Of my hands cracked and scarred, unable to dance to the music in my mind. Applause in another chamber far away from where I was playing. The clavier came the next morning. It was a frightfully worn little thing, but Wolfril clapped his hands in delight and immediately asked Papa for sheet music paper so that he could write down the concerto he was keeping in his head. He spent the rest of the day bent over pages scattered across the instrument, alternately scribbling and playing. When Mama finally had to pull him away so that he could eat something, tears sprang to Wolfril's eyes.
"Look at this child, Anna," Papa said to my mother. "It's as if you are tearing his heart from his breast."
The sight of the paper tempted me, too. Perhaps I could compose my own variation of the melodies that haunted my dreams and days. But, of course, I could not ask for such a thing. So, instead, I pretended not to notice as Wolfril scribbled his notes down, smearing the ink across the page with the ball of his hand. When he went to play them on the clavier, I recognized them as the harmonies that he had hummed to me in the carriage. They were intact, the very same measures. He had told the truth after all. He remembered every bit of it. Papa watched him with a bright light in his eyes. He seemed unable to speak lest he interrupt his young son's brilliance. If I had left the room and wandered away into the streets, I did not think he would have noticed. Finally, after several hours, Papa left for the palace to make sure all our arrangements were in place. Mama had taken Wolfril to look at the market that sprawled in the streets outside our inn. I was alone with the clavier, which sat unused and quiet. I took a seat at it. The bench let out a loud creak. The keys looked yellow and scratched, the black paint nearly gone, and as I skimmed a hand across them, I noticed several notes sounded horribly out of tune. The highest E did not work at all. But it was still a clavier, and better than drumming my fingers on a wooden carriage wall. I opened my notebook, set it on the stand, and began to play. I started with my scales and arpeggios, then transitioned to a minuet. My fingers warmed. I closed my eyes and finally let myself sink into this safe place. In the darkness appeared a rolling line, sloping upward and then back down like a painter's brush, smooth and bright and liquid, a climbing trail of notes that floated into open skies. My senses grew heavy with their sweetness. It took me a moment to realize that I was no longer playing my minuet. but the tune I had seen strewn across our carriage's path in the forest. I stopped abruptly. My eyes fluttered open. A sudden longing seized me then, and I looked over to the quill that Wulfril had set on the edge of the clavier stand, ready for him to compose. My heart tightened with fear and confusion. Composition was a man's realm. Everyone knew this. It was the world of Herr Handel and Herr Bach, of my father and the Kapellmeisters of Europe. It was the world Wulfril was already discovering. I had never questioned this rule before I'd heard the kingdom in my dreams or the princeling's perfect voice. Composition was not my place, and my father had never hinted otherwise. So why could I not look away from the quill atop the clavier? I heard the music in my mind, the song from the kingdom that shifted the longer I dwelled on it. My throat turned dry, and my hands trembled. When Hyacinth had told me that he would help me, was this his intent, to give me this desire? Papa would not approve if he saw me. What would he do? Take away my notebook, perhaps? He might even ban me from future performances and let Wulfril go alone. But most likely of all, he would destroy my composition as punishment for my disobedience. A daughter who went around her father's lessons, who stepped into a realm that he never gave her permission to enter? He would be embarrassed at my brashness and angry at my rebellion. I imagined him tossing the music into the stove, both of us watching the delicate paper curl into ash. To create something, only to see it destroyed. The thought of that risk stabbed the sharpest at me. I tore my gaze from the quill, almost ready to abandon it. But the melody from the forest lingered in my ears, beautiful and alluring, coaxing me forward. I felt the ache of it with the same intensity as the night of my first dream, when I had woken with my hand outstretched, wanting to be a part of that world. The rain tapped a muffled rhythm against the roof, the pulse right before a song. What would Hyacinth say? The glimmer in his eyes told me he would urge me on. And Wulfril? He would clap his hands in delight and ask to hear the melody. Slowly, slowly, the threat of my father's punishment began to fade. Against the steady desire to write it down. Finally, with one bold gesture, I took up the quill and dipped it into the inkwell. My hands reached up as if of their own accord toward my notebook. I turned the pages until I'd nearly reached the end, and then I stopped on a blank page that no one would think to look at. For a moment, I hesitated. I am done with it, Hyacinth had told me when he had returned the notebook.
Use it as your path back to me.
What had he done to it? The blank page seemed unremarkable. Yet, the longer I stared, the more I felt it staring back at me, as if the princeling had touched his fingers to the paper and soaked his otherworldly being into the fibers. He was watching me. Waiting.
Tell me what you want, he had said.
So I began to write. The room was silent, save for the scratching of quill against parchment and the roar of the music in my mind. The strokes of my ink shook slightly against the page, but I forced myself to steady. The palms of my hands turned clammy with sweat. It wouldn't be long before I would hear someone coming back up the steps to our room. But I couldn't stop. A wild joy rushed underneath my blanket of fear. This moment was fleeting. And mine. The melody from the carriage path looked back at me from the paper, suddenly made into reality. I continued, writing as quickly and quietly as I could, nurturing the little tune, knowing that at any moment I would hear someone coming back up the steps to our room.
when I finally put the quill down and ran my finger across the page to see if the ink had dried, I noticed how warm the paper felt. My breaths came shallow and rapid. I hurriedly replaced the quill, then closed my notebook carefully so that it would not flip open to my page. My heart beat wildly at the thrill of this secret. The air, the light, something shifted in the room. It was as if the princeling were watching me through the paper that connected us. I had never disobeyed my father before. From now on, there would forever be my life before this moment, and my life after. By the time Mama came back upstairs with Wulfril, I had returned to my usual lessons. They listened to me play for a while. From the corner of my eye, I could see Wulfril's large grin, as if he could not contain his joy, and my mother's face, a calm canvas, even as she smiled and nodded along to my playing. On the floor beside her, Wulfril fidgeted as he hunched over his papers, scribbling. I felt as if he already knew about my secret, that he would jump up at any moment, flip through my notebook's blank pages, and expose my little tune to the light. I could hear his familiar laugh in my head. But he remained beside my mother. I continued to play. Long moments passed. Finally, when I finished, and Wulfril took his turn at the clavier, Papa returned home with a rumpled, powdered wig and a whirlwind of words, hardly able to contain his excitement.
"Anna,"
he said breathlessly, gesturing to my mother. I looked up from where I sat on my bed. Only my brother continued to play, as if lost to his surroundings. Mama laughed. "You look flustered, Leopold."
"Word has spread throughout the city,"
Papa replied. I could not remember his eyes ever looking so reflective.
"On the streets, in the palace square, everyone wants to hear more about our arrival. They call the children miracles. We are being talked about everywhere."
Wulfril and I exchanged a quick look. Mama clapped her hands together in pleasure.
"The sentries tell me that the Empress has taken ill," he continued, then quickly added, "Just a cold, nothing to fret over. Wulfril and Nanril are to play for them in 3 days at the Schönbrunn Palace at noon."
And so our first performance was decided. Wulfril looked up from his writing and announced that he would name his concerto after the Empress. I thought of my secret page and waited for my father to look at me and see it imprinted in my gaze.
"What have you been up to, Nanril?" he would ask.
But he didn't. Instead, he went on about the court's excitement over our concert, the reactions of those in the streets. His eyes crinkled with pleasure. I stayed where I was and watched the way he took Mama's hands in his. He did not know. My secret hummed in the back of my throat. Somewhere, in the air, unseen, Hyacinth watched me and smiled in approval. I knew that he had heard it, and I wondered what he would do next. Mama woke both of us early the next morning. I startled out of a dream of wandering down a dark path through the upside-down trees. Wulfril sat up in bed and rubbed sleep from his eyes. Through a crack in our window, I could already hear the bustling sounds of Vienna's streets, waking to greet the day. "Hurry now, children," she said, patting both our cheeks and giving us a wink. "You need to look the part you will play." We ate a quick breakfast of cold meats and poppy seed bread, and then I put on my white cap and left the inn with Mama, Papa, and Wulfril. Compared with Salzburg, the streets looked wider here, and paved with newer cobblestones. It was still early, and the wet air bit my cheeks with its chill. I could smell the honey and wheat from the bakeries. Ottoman merchants in layered coats and shining sashes gathered near the Fleischmarkt's coffee house, conversing with one another in Turkish. Men hawked walnuts and colorful ribbons at intersections. I held Wulfril's hand. Papa walked on my brother's other side, distracted by the sights,
and when he walked too fast, I picked up my skirts and hurried along behind him. To the Viennese, it must have been obvious that we did not live here. I looked nervously away from several curious passers-by. It seemed like a long time before we finally arrived at the tailor and dressmaker shop, adorned with a sign that said, Das feine Binnenmann.
Welcome, welcome, said the man that opened the door for us.
He blinked blue eyes at my father.
May I ask your name, Herr?
I glanced behind him at the shop. It was very tidy, lined with elaborate caps and leather shoes on models, stays and stomachers trimmed with braided silk, rolls and rolls of fabrics in all colors and patterns, petticoats and gowns with beautiful embroidery. In one corner stood a full Mantua gown cut in the latest fashion, made out of an elaborately patterned yellow silk that sloped elegantly at the hips. I found myself admiring its repeating floral images, the way it bunched in and then straight at the back. It was the kind of dress one wore before royalty. What I would wear, soon enough. Papa shook the man's hand.
Herr Leopold Mozart.
He bowed his head slightly. I caught a glimpse of my father's eyes and saw a hint of pleasure coiled within them. He was waiting for the tailor to recognize his name. To Papa's satisfaction, the man's grin widened.
Ah, Herr Mozart of Salzburg, he exclaimed, taking my father's hand with both of his. I've heard a great deal about your arrival to our city, friend. Your children are to perform at the palace soon, yes?
When Papa nodded, the tailor's eyes turned round. I watched him carefully. More and more, he reminded me of Hyacinth. A hint of blue in his skin whenever he turned, a slight slant of his eyes, a trick of the light, a flash of his bright teeth. I wondered if he had leapt into the body of a man in order to prepare us for our debut. His eyes darted between Wuffrel and me.
Rest assured, children, that you will leave here looking like royalty.
The man's smile had grown so large by now that I thought it might fall from his face.
Thank you, sir, Papa replied. Spare no expense, I want them at their best.
I glanced quickly at our father. Mama would scold him for this later if he ever revealed how much he was willing to spend on our clothes. Already I could imagine her arms crossed and her lips tight. The man bowed.
Let me fetch several others. We will begin straight away.
With that, he hurried off. Wuffrel made a move to dart after him, but I grabbed my brother's arm and spoke sharply. I did not want Papa to think I could not mind him. The man soon returned with his help. Two dressmakers, one clothier, and one assistant. They approached me with a new garment, and I held my arms up so that they could pull the stay tightly around my waist, the inner boning pressing against my ribs. The gown itself was made from deep blue satin, smooth and soft and cold to the touch, open in front to reveal the creamy layers of petticoats buried underneath. The collar was high, concealing the skin of my clavicle and throat. One of my hands stayed pressed against my blue pendant, deep in my petticoat's pocket. I stared at my reflection as the dressmakers and clothier worked, my eyes locked on the mirror standing before us. My cheeks looked flushed from the cold streets. Nearby, I could see my brother wriggling throughout his own fitting. At one point, he hopped down from his dais and ran to our father to hold up his shining cufflinks, forcing his clothier to hurry after him. I looked on in silence, unable to mind him. The rigid structure of my dress dug into me, holding me back. Even if I wanted, I could not move my arms as freely as Wuffrel could. Would this be how I performed before royalty? Barely able to move? When they finished, Papa guided me to the nearby wig shop and parlor. There, the wig makers pulled my hair back and away from my face, fitting me with a curled wig that piled high on my head and then tumbled down my shoulders in a cascade.
They patted the hair with white powder until the fine dust floated in the air around us. I wrinkled my nose at its stale scent. The weight of it made me keep my head and neck at a strict, straight angle. I tried to puzzle out how to lean into my music as I played while wearing such a thing. Noon approached, and finally we finished our fittings. As we thanked the clothier and made our way out, I cast one final glance over my shoulder. The tailor smiled back, his tall figure cutting a long shadow on the floor. His teeth were very white, his eyes so blue they seemed to glow.
"I'll see you soon, Nanril," he said.
I looked at my father for his reaction, but he did not seem to notice. Only Vufril tightened his hand in mine. I tried to remind myself that this must be part of Hyacinth's plan. In order for me to perform, I must first look the part. The rest of the day passed in a blur of practice, as did the next. I could not sleep the night before our performance. Instead, I stared at the ceiling in silence, drowning in thoughts. My glass pendant lay tucked underneath my pillow, so that I could feel its slight bump against the back of my head. I let myself take comfort in its presence, a reminder of my wish.
Nanril?
I turned to look at my brother. His eyes blinked back at me in the darkness. I propped myself up on one elbow and smiled at him.
"You should rest," I whispered. "So should you," he protested. "But you're not."
He glanced over to where our father slept, afraid that he would stir. It had not occurred to me that Vulfril might be nervous too. I reached over and took his hand in mine. I was small for my age, but his fingers were tiny even in my palm.
"You have nothing to be afraid of," I said gently. "All of Austria is excited to hear you. The Emperor requested you personally. You will not disappoint."
Vufril closed his little fingers around one of mine.
"I'm not afraid," he said.
I smiled again.
"Then why are you awake?"
Vufril scooted closer to me, buried his head in my pillow, and pointed toward the clavier. I followed his hand until my eyes rested on my notebook. It was closed.
"What is it?"
I asked.
"The notebook is singing," he whispered. "I can't sleep."
I turned my head quickly back to the clavier. We fell silent. I heard the sound of a late-night coach from the streets below, the whisper of wind, Papa's gentle snore, a trickle of water from some mysterious place. I did not hear the music.
"Are you sure?"
I whispered to Vulfril.
"What do you mean?"
He wrinkled his nose at me.
"Nanril,"
he exclaimed in a quiet hiss.
"It is singing right now. You can't hear it? It is very loud."
"It must be Hyacinth.
He has done something to my notebook. He is here."
I waited for a moment, forcing my breathing to stay even, until Vufril began to squirm. Then I swung my legs over the side of the bed, rested my feet on the floor, and slowly made my way to the clavier. Still, I heard nothing. The floor numbed my feet. I took care not to tremble.
"I should be in bed," I thought. "Our performance."
When I had moved close enough, I picked my notebook off the clavier stand and clutched it to my chest. Gingerly, I made my way back to bed. Vufril sat up straighter, eager to see.
"It keeps repeating the same lines," he insisted. "Over and over and over."
My skin tingled. We both froze for an instant as Papa stirred. I kept my eyes on him until he turned away from us, and then I relaxed my shoulders. I opened the notebook quietly.
"What does it sound like?"
I whispered. Vufril hesitated for a moment.
Like this.
He hummed a few notes as softly as he could. I swallowed hard. My initial excitement, my sudden thoughts of the princeling, all vanished. Vufril must have discovered my secret composition, I thought, the little wisp of music I'd written down several days ago. I felt an abrupt rush of anger.
You're making it up,
I whispered harshly.
The notebook is not singing at all. You are.
Vufril burst into a fit of giggles. He threw himself face down into his pillow. I closed my notebook in disappointment and hid it inside our blankets. His quiet laughter stung.
This is my notebook, Vufril. You shouldn't take what's not yours. You aren't going to tell Papa, are you?
His giggles died down. He looked at me solemnly.
Well, why are you hiding it? It's beautiful.
His words were so serious, said so truthfully, that any anger I might have had flitted away.
Young ladies do not compose,
I told him. He shook his head.
Why?
I took his hands in mine and squeezed them once. How much and how little he understood of my life.
Please, Vufril, let it be our secret. Promise me you won't tell anyone else.
It was Vufril's turn to look upset.
But who will hear it then?
He whispered, horrified.
You're not going to let it stay there forever, are you? Yes, I am.
I gave him a firm look.
If you love me, then promise me.
Vufril stared at me for a long time. When he knew that he could not sway me with his defiance, he flopped back down in bed.
I do love you,
he declared grudgingly.
So I promise I will never tell.
I settled down into bed. We drifted into silence, but Vulfril's teasing brought back the undercurrent of fear, my muted excitement from when I wrote the music down. What was Hyacinth up to, coaxing me into this? God will punish me for hiding such a thing from Papa. It would mean that I was the kind of girl who disobeyed her father, who would go on to disobey other men, her husband in her life. So many stories already circulated about us. What would this story become if it began to spread? They would say that she was the kind of girl who did not listen. She was the kind of girl who had her own ideas. I pulled my blankets higher until they reached my chin, and then imagined the princeling turning his head this way and that, his bright eyes watching me from the other side of the room. I hoped he was. I clutched my notebook closer to my chest and stared, searching the darkness, until I drifted off to sleep, with the image still branded in my thoughts.